Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:12 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is June 19th, and it was a pretty strong day on stock markets. If I just scroll over to the World Equity Indices, we should see that the Hang Seng was up over 1%, the CSI in, 300 in China up about the same, about just 1%. Pretty firm day on the majority of Europe. But most particularly Germany and the UK. And of course, that is also on the same day that the Brexit negotiations really got going, with a lot of handshaking and smiles all around. But that is putting a brave face on what is going to be a difficult negotiating environment for much of the next few months and potentially even a few years. There has been a great deal made in the UK press about just what it is all going to entail and the great challenges that the UK faces. And all of that is true. But it's not as if the UK is going into these negotiations with nothing to offer or indeed to threaten. So when we think about it in those terms, what is it that the UK really has? Well, the first, of course, is that they have ceded they've ceded the point that the UK, that the EU really wanted, which was that they didn't want to negotiate. The UK didn't want to negotiate the exact figure of what the Brexit bill was going to be, but the EU needs it because they've already budgeted for that expenditure. And if the UK is not going to pay, then the money's going to have to come from somewhere. So that's a rather urgent point for the EU. The fact that they're going to be negotiating it up front, that doesn't mean, of course, that the UK is going to cede every point, but rather that it is a very important part of the negotiations, because it represents the biggest thing that the UK holds over the EU, and it is eventually all going to come down to money. There is, of course, the a second string to all of this, and it is: what is it that the UK could do if it were completely independent of the EU's rule-making infrastructure, regardless of whether that is inside or outside the EEA? And it has a vast number of potential options, some of them very protectionist, some of them very free market, some of them very capitalistic, some of them that could be almost socialistic, and all depending on what the UK wants to choose and how it wants to set itself up as a global trader, then that is another potential threat. It's another potential arm to its negotiating strategy. There is, of course, something that no one ever seems to talk about, and is that the UK is a nuclear power, and you cannot simply push around a nuclear power. So that at least would suggest that the EU cannot be too onerous in what it is demanding, because the UK is a significant military power, and there will need to be some form of cooperation in future. And if the UK holds back its support in whatever happens in future, none of us know, and we certainly know that the geopolitical environment is becoming progressively more volatile, then what we can definitely think of is that military might can play a role in negotiating. After all, what Winston Churchill said was that war is diplomacy by other means, but the threat of withholding war is also diplomacy, and withholding aid is also diplomacy. So there's a lot that is going to be negotiated, and really the UK is not going into these negotiations with its eyes closed, I suspect. I think that there is a realization that things are going to be tough. And UK inflation is picking up. That is something that the Bank of England is speaking about. And that is a significant factor. If the UK is inflating, then it means that that is going to continue to put a cap on just how much the pound can rally relative to the EU or to the Eurozone. But at the same time, what it also does is that it helps to reduce some of that large amount of debt that the UK has. One of the problems that it has is that will only work to the extent that the Bank of England demurs from raising interest rates, because so much of the, particularly the household debt in the UK, is index linked, or at least it's on a floating rate rather than index linked. That's not the proper characterization, but it is certainly floating rate. If the Bank of England is raising rates, well, then that is going to erode any benefit in terms of the inflationary impact on the outstanding debt. But there doesn't seem to be any prospect of that right now. When we look at the pound versus the euro, then I think that is perhaps the best arbiter of how people are viewing the competitive negotiation process. And if this range is going to hold, then that level around 112.5 is going to be sustained. But it is broadly range bound over the last year and a bit. In fact, what we can see is that there was a significant depreciation in the pound right at the beginning of June, following the Brexit decision, and since then there hasn't been very much movement at all. A significant deterioration in the news flow would really be required to send the pound below the 110 level. It is much more likely that we're going to be in a rangy environment for the foreseeable future, but I think what happens over the next month or two is going to test that hypothesis. So, because we're right at the lower side of the range, and there has only been some very modest strengthening since the election decision, so it really is contingent on that 112.5 area holding if this range is going to persist. When we take a broader picture of what is going on, then this was a reasonably firm day on the Nasdaq. It was up over 1%, up 90 points. This is the first move that we've had that suggests that some of the bulls are returning in force over the last week. And if we get upside follow-through tomorrow, well, then that would be additional evidence that people are using this as a buying opportunity. And when we look at just how many shares were up today, then the majority were in positive territory. And what I find really quite interesting is two things. One was that there's a number of Chinese, US-listed Chinese shares are among the better performers. The second is that it was some of the large cap shares like Nvidia and Apple were also doing rather well. But then it's also that you have biotechnology, and biotechnology is the sector that is not overextended relative to its trend mean. So that is what I would prefer to focus on at the present moment, because we still have really quite overextended conditions on a significant number of shares, and most particularly those mega cap technology shares. Despite the fact that we've had a pause and a consolidation over the last couple of weeks, they are still really quite overextended. But that is not the case with biotechnology, and we're seeing now increasing evidence that it is firming from the region of the trend mean. This has been a sector that has been out in the cold for much of the last 2 years. It was looking really quite hot, and was attracting money from all quarters in the middle of 2015. It was the sector that could do no wrong. And what I'm tempted to think of right now is, doesn't that sound familiar? And then it had this very large pullback. The most important thing that it did during that pullback was it didn't give up the entire advance. Then it spent all of last year ranging, and in fact it has spent most of this year ranging. But it is ranging with an upward bias, most particularly since about June of last year. Well, I guess it's probably more like July. And now it is firming once more from the region of the trend mean, and that trend mean has turned upwards. There is an increasing flow of positive news coming out of the biotechnology sector. I think if we really look at the long-term chart, we can see that back in we have to go substantially further back than that. Back in the late 1990s, it rallied spectacularly. It went from about the index went from 25 to 150 it between 1998 and early 2000. Then it gave up almost the entire advance and then ranged for the better part of a decade. Well, money, I guess many of the same stories that contributed to that incredible bull market in the 1990s are some of the are the kinds of things that we're hearing today. But there is one key difference, and it is that we're way closer to commercialization today. That what a lot of these companies now have is products in the market, or they have products in late stage development, or they're in phase two or three trials and getting either they're getting accelerated, they're getting permission to accelerate their development, or they already have these drugs in the market that are having really quite profound effects. So a lot of the promises that were made in the 1990s are beginning to come true almost 20 years later. And that is also a measure of just how long it takes to develop the technology. Even though we could see what the future was 20 years ago, it does take time to bring them to commercial reality. So I think this is quite important that we had a phenomenal breakout from about 2011 through to 2015, and then we've had the first big consolidation, and now it is turning back to a position of outperformance. And when you think about what is the risk reward, well, Nvidia was among the best performing shares today. It is really in a hot sector. In fact, it's in a number of hot sectors, and that has contributed to its remarkable outperformance. And not only is it very well positioned within the gaming industry, it's well positioned in the autonomous vehicle industry and in the Bitcoin mining industry. But this is the share over the last couple of years that could do no wrong. It's pretty much where biotech was in 2014 or 2015. It has accelerated higher. It is doing spectacularly well. And just like anything that accelerates higher, when it stops accelerating higher, well, then it will turn from being the strongest thing in the world to a position of underperformance in a very swift period of time. The risk, of course, is that by not buying it, it goes to 180 in very short order. But 100, that's only $20 on a $160 share, so we're talking about 12.5%, about one eighth. But if the biotech sector goes up by $20, well, then that's a much better total return. So it if you if we are thinking about what is the sector that's likely to outperform, it's probably that which has the potential right now to perform a catch-up play. And an increasing number of immuno-oncology shares are turning to outperformance. That really does represent the primary growth avenue within the biotechnology sector because of the rapid commercialization, which has been greatly enhanced by CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing technology. And that is something that's likely to remain a very bullish factor for the foreseeable future. Well, if we then take a look around at the rest of the world, maybe if we look at the commodity complex, there is certainly something interesting happening in oil. It was down nearly 50 cents in here today. It has so far failed to find support beyond a brief pause in the region of the May low. And it is right back testing that point where it bounced emphatically back in May. There is a short-term oversold condition. There is also a rivetingly consistent progression of lower rally highs, and until that is broken, there will be no evidence that support has been found. The relative weakness of the energy complex is acting as a headwind for the continuous commodity index, and it is noteworthy that it has now failed to find support in the region of 400. It is breaking below it, and the moving average has turned downwards and it has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. So it's a downtrend. And that's important because it has now failed to find support where, if support was going to be found, that it was the most likely area. So what is quite interesting is the London Metals Index has found support. It's found support in the region of the trend mean. It's been really quite steady. And that's interesting because what we've seen over the last year, excuse me, really since the beginning of January, has been a rangy environment for copper. But copper was up by about $2, excuse me, 2 cent, 2.5 cents in here today, and continues to firm from that psychological $2.50 area. The London Metals Index has been pretty much consolidating for most of the year, and so has the dollar index. And by and large, what people anticipate is that there's going to be an inverse correlation between the dollar and commodities. But in fact, what we've seen over the last 6 months is that there has been an outright correlation, that the dollar has been coming down and so have metals. And now, with the dollar starting to strengthen up again, we're starting to see the industrial metals beginning to firm, whereas it's put downward pressure on the oil price. And perhaps that is an indication that the industrial commodities are highly leveraged to economic growth, and lower energy prices are conducive to economic growth, and that is something that is quite beneficial. That also the dollar is in a rising interest rate environment, so that's the while the two facts might be related, they're not dependent on one another. There is no way that the Fed would be raising interest rates unless they thought that the US economy had at least some chance of being able to bear somewhat higher interest rates. The dollar was additionally firm in here today. It looks like that it has found at least short-term support, and it has been falling for most of the year already. And I think that a lot of the rather vociferous bullish action has been squeezed out of this market. I think that there is at least the prospect that it is going to rally enough to close that overextension relative to the trend mean and at least put an extra 2 points on the dollar index. Whether it then has the wherewithal to break the almost 7 month or 6 month progression of lower rally highs is going to be the big question when once we get up to that level. And this was a reasonably firm day in China today. The Hang Seng was, which has been, pausing over the last couple of days, was in firm form in here today, and is pushing back up towards this 26,000 area, and this continues to represent a reasonably consistent advance. If we look at the H share index, then we have three ranges, one above another, and it has. It wasn't able to hold the breakout last week, but it has held the majority of the advance, and it was in positive territory in here today. So this is still really quite a steady environment. And the Taiwanese market, which has been so far has broken out above 10,000, came back and found support in the region of 10,000, and now it is bouncing from that region. This is really quite positive action. And it suggests that this is a breakout that has got legs. Well, with the relative strength of the dollar, then that's important for Japan, because the yen got all the way back down to 110 again, and now the yen is weakening once more. The Nikkei, which has paused in the region of that psychological 20,000 level over the last 6 weeks, has pushed back up above it once more. And I think it's really worth reiterating that the 20,000 level is a big level for the Nikkei. Since 1996, it hasn't been able to sustain a move above it. So if it can sustain the move above the 20,000 level, well, then we would have really solid ground to base a medium to longer term bullish hypothesis on. So that really is important. And it is also worth looking at the topics because 1750 has been an area of resistance on successive occasions, and it is looking increasingly likely that it is going to be able to push above this 1600 area. And it is also worth highlighting that the TOPIX, which is the much broader index, has been considerably firmer than the Nikkei. And the second section is also firming here and has successfully pushed back up to that 6,000 level and is challenging its highs. So I think that this is looking like an increasingly bullish environment for Japanese equities, and considering that they have underperformed for such a remarkably long time, and that is also the case with Taiwan, and that they're not, these markets are, they went up together in the 1980s. They've done very little since then. And the fact that they are both now turning to outperformance, I don't think that's merely a coincidence. And many people have looked on the correlation between the U.S. Treasury market, or U.S. Treasury yields most particularly, and Japan, and the long bond has pushed above 155 over the last four sessions, but it was in negative territory just about in here today. It really does need to hold that 155 area if potential for additional upside is to be given the benefit of the doubt, and it is right in the region of the trend mean. So there is the added question about whether it is going to be able to sustain this move above the trend mean. That's a really big question, and I think a point that both David and I have made over the last few months, and indeed over the last few years, is that the strategy that works best in a bull market is buy the dips, and it isn't really until the buy the dip strategy stops working that you have real evidence that the bull market is over. And this is a big question. A lot of people have been saying buy the dip in bonds, and so far it's worked, and it will have to fail if this is to represent more than a short-term peak. So what happens, I think, is really very important around these levels. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.